Adventurous Audio. From idea to ear.
This is our second episode of Speaking of Suicide to come from the Wilderness Wellbeing Retreat, which is being run in the remote Scottish Cairngorms. A big part of the retreat is to allow people space and opportunity to share some of their mental health stories if they want to. And last night we heard from Alex and Cammy, two guys from Andy's Man Club, who shared something of their stories. It's really powerful stuff, and so I wanted to share it for this episode of Speaking of Suicide. As always, some of the stuff that they talk about is difficult. It could be triggering. If you find it too difficult, please press pause and go and get some support. We've put all the details for Mikey's Line and Andy's Man Club in the show notes. I'll also put the details of the Wilderness Retreat if you want to find out more about where we are and what we've been up to.
So, evening everyone. So, just first, before we start, thanks to everyone that's already shared there, and I think we all got a wee bit emotional there. So, obviously I'm still going to talk about suicide and the effects that are left behind it as well. So, for those that don't know, I'm part of Andy's Man Club, and there's a couple of guys here today. So, again, we talk about suicide, so if you do need to leave, then please feel free just to take a couple of minutes. We started the Suicide Prevention Charity in a male peer support group in 2016 down in Halifax after a young man, Andy Roberts, took his own life by suicide. And as we've heard already, the devastation that leaves behind the family of Andy decided they wanted to do something in his honour and create a safe space for guys to come together weekly basis and get shit off their chest, which is something that guys historically don't do. So came up with the concept of a coffee club. So it was his brother-in-law Luke who started it along with Elaine, Andy's mum. And they'd put a post out on Facebook, and due to demand, we had our first meeting less than a week later. And nine guys turned up to the very first meeting, and AMC was born. And we've grown from that one group. We now have, well, on Monday we're opening another couple of groups, but we've built almost 290 groups across the UK. Guys from all walks of life walk through the door on a Monday night, 7 till 9, to, like I said, get shit off their chest. I went down in 2017. I was working for the Scottish Prison Service at the time, and doing a lot in recovery, and we wanted to do more in mental health. And we had a wee look around to see what was there, and there was nothing for men in Scotland at that time. We discovered Andy's Man Club because we'd seen a picture on Twitter, Ricky Gervais just doing that, and just Googled to see what he was doing. Discovered Andy's Man Club, watched a couple of videos, and a couple of videos that I watched on Andy and about his story, I could resonate a lot with my own struggles with mental health and a failed suicide attempt as well. So we got in touch and went down to a meeting and got so much out of the meeting that we decided to bring it back up the road. We then got in touch with a couple of local football clubs and areas to try and get it involved, and we launched in the jail in September the 4th, 2017, and then 2 weeks later we launched in the community with St Johnson Football Club and their community trust as well. So it started as that one group. We only thought that one group in Scotland would be it, but it's grown and grown and grown, and we now have 56, soon to be 57 in Scotland alone, which is absolutely brilliant. So the premise of Andy's Man Club, a bit like this, we're sitting in random rooms all across the country, circle of chairs, and we've got our own version of talking stick, which is a foam football. So it's like a big massive stress ball. So when you've got that ball, it's your turn to talk. If you don't want to answer any questions, you just pass the ball on. It's a safe, non-judgmental space, a bit like this whole weekend. So what's said in the room stays in the room. And there's never any pressure to share. If you don't want to talk, you can just pass the ball on. No one will say anything because we've all been there, eh? Sometimes the hardest thing is actually walking through the door. So once we're there, we've done the hard bit. But like getting in the cold water of the day, we're all going, oh, it's going to be freezing. The hardest bit's just taking that first step in life. So once they're through the door, it's a wee bit easier. The guys make them feel welcome. The five questions we run through are just designed to get guys to open up and talk. First three are always the same. So they know they're coming back to each week, so they know what to expect. Number one, how's your week been? Just a general catch-up to see how they're going on. Number two, one positive for your week. And we can always find a positive. Even that guy's struggling to find one, we can find one. He's walked through the door, whether it's his first time or his 101st time, because when you're feeling that bad, the hardest thing you can do is get out of your bed, eh? So we celebrate that. It's an absolutely massive achievement. Question three is, anything off your chest? And that's where we hear all sorts of guys struggling with debt, addiction, relationship issues, struggling at work, crashing the car, kicking the cat, burning the toast, whatever it is, that's their opportunity to get off their chest, because little things become big things the more you think about these things. So we just want to relieve a bit of that pressure, a bit like a pressure cooker or a bottle of Coke. If you shake your bottle of Coke and open it in once, it's going to make a mess. But if we just release that pressure every week, it's going to keep guys on that level that they can deal with whatever they're going through, because everything we're going through in life is temporary. And that's what we're trying to get through to guys, that no matter what you're experiencing, you can actually get through it. You don't need to go and make a permanent decision like suicide. So once we get that into guys' heads, we get them through it and they thrive and become facilitators like you'll hear from in a minute. So we then stop for a break, and this is where the magic happens. So that's after question three, it can be quite heavy. So we stop for a break, another cup of tea or coffee. So you can imagine if we've got all these guys, 5,800 men a week walking through the door in Andy's Man Club. So if all have two cups of tea or coffee, that's a lot of brew material. But so they're standing there, and sometimes it's the guys that have been really quiet for weeks that are actually supporting the other guys in the group, because they've had that shared experience. They've been there. They've experienced what that boy's experienced and can help him through whatever storm he's going through. Whether it's just going, I know what it's like, mate, I've been there. Or telling them about a contact or an organisation that may be able to help them through whatever they're going through. And that's where that peer support, that brotherhood that we talk about in Andy's Man Club comes from. Because guys genuinely do start looking after each other. And some of my best mates now I've met through Andy's Man Club. And because we've had that shared living experience, we've got each other through some shit outside Andy's Man Club as well. And it just helps. So we then talk about it, not just on a Monday night, but when we meet up for a coffee or go for a walk or climb a hill, whatever it is, we start supporting guys through that as well, which is absolutely brilliant. We then get back together for question four and five. And it's a bit like what we did there. Everyone's talking. And the worst thing you want to do is get everyone back into the circle, because it stops all those conversations going, all that support. But the four and five are positive neurological response questions. So they're designed to get guys thinking a wee bit more positive about some of the stuff. So it could be random things like one positive thing to do for yourself or for someone else. Or a reflective question to see how far you've come since you walked through the door. Or a daffy question, which are the hardest ones to make up because they become repetitive. So it could be your favourite dad joke, your favourite sandwich topping, which way did you put the toilet roll in the toilet holder? Or one we had a couple of weeks ago, which caused so much chaos and criticism, is like, how do you eat your Kit Kat? And I put my hands up, that was me. I apologise, boys, but the stick I got for that, but it was one of the best questions we had for a long time. And then Nestle sent us like 40 million Kit Kats. So I'm now sick of Kit Kats eating that. But I honestly didn't know there was so many ways to eat a Kit Kat. But I can't tell you any of them, because whatever stays in the room stays in the room. Sorry. And genuinely, some of the funniest things I've heard have been in EMC, and that's even after 20 years working in the jail. It's absolutely brilliant. So it's nice to see the guys going out a wee bit lighter than from when we walked through the door. And that can happen instantly after one meeting or several meetings, depending on how quickly the boy opens up. So hopefully they're leaving in a better frame of mind when they walk through the door at 7 o'clock. But the support doesn't stop there. So every group has a closed Facebook group. And it's only guys that attend that local meeting. So for example, my local meeting's Perth, which I don't get to very often. So it's only guys that have actually sat in that room at McDermott Park that can get access to that group. And they've got to be added there by one of our facilitators who look after that. And that's just an extension of the group that's there. If guys are struggling, put a wee shout out. Someone will come back and support them. Go for a coffee, meet them for a walk. And that's the guys from within the group supporting each other. That's not Andy's Man Club. That's the guys walking through the door that support each other, which is absolutely brilliant. It's also there for social stuff. So there's guys play pool on a Thursday night. There's five-a-side football going on all across the country. There's a cycling section. There's a photography section. There's loads going on all across the UK. Guys coming together. They've never actually met each other, but they're sharing coping strategies with each other across the country, which is absolutely brilliant to see. So, as I say, we're now up to 290-odd groups nearly, and we're averaging about 5,800 men. And that's scary, because when I first got involved, we were group number 11, and we were averaging about 100 men. So to see it grow is just phenomenally, it's phenomenally scary. And it's getting guys through the door, and anything we can do to raise that awareness and get guys through the door, just like the boys that are here, they've all walked through the door for the first time. I am that one man. I still go to Andy's Man Club for me, for my own mental wellness. I was first diagnosed with depression, anxiety and panic attacks when I was 21. And I've been on off medication all my adult life for a chemical imbalance. And I'm quite happy to talk about it, because it's only we've got to normalise the conversation and reduce the stigma. I went through a messy breakup and divorce with my first wife, 2012. And just started to look at different ways to support myself, and unfortunately they weren't healthy ways. As I said, I worked in the jail, so I was doing lots of extra shifts to pay for all the extra costs of separation and CSA, child benefit stuff. And I was also trying to become a PT so I could get my job in the gym, which is why I joined the prison service in the first place. So I was taking loads on, doing lots of extra shifts to pay for all. And unfortunately, I started to use alcohol and painkillers to cope. And just got myself into a real mess because alcohol is a depressant for a start. So it just amplified everything I was going through in my head. And I basically used that as a crutch just to cope. So I'd come home after a shift in the jail, turn a couple of bottles of wine, take some pills so I could sleep. So I could get up the next day, put the mask back on and pretend everything was all right. Go back into the jail and just be Alex again. And this carried on for about a year. Got myself into a relationship on Plenty of Fish, as you do nowadays. And moved myself away through to Monifieth. Away from all my support in Perth, and just started to isolate myself from my friends and family. Wasn't getting to see my daughter as much as we liked because she didn't like my new partner. And things turned quite toxic quite quickly. I ended up in the hospital. They thought I was having a stroke, but it turned out to be cluster migraines brought on by stress. So I got a brain scan, and they found one, which was brilliant. But then I got put on medication. So I got put on medication for the headaches. Unfortunately, I took a reaction because of the other stuff I was abusing as well. Ended up back in the hospital. And that's the first time I admitted to my doctor that I was abusing other substances. So I had to detox off everything, which was horrendous in its own rights, before I could get put on this new wonder medication that was going to change my life. Unfortunately, the most common side effect to that antidepressant is you will have suicidal thoughts. So I was in this perfect storm. My life had turned to shit. I wasn't getting to see my kid. And now my meds were telling me to kill myself. I didn't want to die, I just wanted the pain and the noise to stop. There was loads of other shit going on, and it was just, I just wanted the noise to stop. Carried on as best I could, and then one Tuesday in April 2015, I decided enough was enough. I couldn't cope with it anymore. I packed up everything I had in my house, laboured it all nice and neat so mum and dad could take away and deal with it. And I was standing with a noose around my neck when my daughter phoned me on the way home from school to tell me she loved me. If it wasn't for that phone call, I wouldn't be standing here talking to you guys today. First time I shared that was the first time I got hold of a ball in April 2017 in Halifax, Shea Stadium, and blurted out in front of 30-odd strangers that I'd never met before until that night, and my best mate. And I passed the ball to my best mate, Adam. He just went, "What the fuck?" Knew everything about each other, but we never talked about that, eh? We never talked, because I didn't want to burden anyone. I didn't want to tell my friends and family what was going on because I didn't want them worrying about me. I genuinely thought I could cope with it. But getting that out there and hearing other people's stories, it gave me hope that I could get through whatever I was facing. Adam then shared losing his brother-in-law to suicide. Again, never ever talked about it. And that's just something guys that don't do. We go to the pub, we talk about absolutely everything and anything else, but we don't talk about real shit. But we're getting better. We are getting better. If we're given the right environment, like Andy's Man Club and other forums, guys will talk, and hopefully I'll help reduce that number. And I've had some shit times since I started going to Andy's Man Club, but it's kept me here. It's kept me going through COVID, long COVID, all these different things that I've experienced. Andy's Man Club's kept me on the planet, and it is a massive part of my recovery. And I've learnt off other guys in the room, so it's not just talking. For 2 hours on a Monday night, I'm only talking for 5 minutes. The rest of the time, I'm sitting listening to guys like Gammy Daz and Sean, listening to how they deal with their mental health. That's how I learnt to cold water dip, meditation, listen to podcasts. I've learned off other guys within the rooms of Andy's Man Club, so it's still a massive part of my recovery. But my story is different to everyone else's story, but it's the same, if that makes sense. So I'm going to ask the quietest man of the weekend to come up and share why he comes to Andy's Man Club. Gammy. I'll sit down so you look all right.
Yeah, hi everyone. So yeah, I'm Cameron. If you've not met me or heard me this weekend, then that's definitely on yourselves. So Alex has spoke a lot about what Andy's Man's Club is, and that's probably the question I've been asked the most this weekend, you know, with the hoodie, what is it? So Alex has explained what it is. What I'm going to do is tell you a story of how I got there, and this is a very hard story for me to tell. There's only three people that know the full version of this story. Now, since I got asked to do this, I've been in two minds whether or not to share the full story. I think the full story is probably going to let everyone in this room kind of know how I got there, and you know how we get to different places. So I'm going to try and get through it. Let's say there's a very small amount of people know this. My own parents don't even know this story. So if this is on, I'm grounded. So I started struggling with mental health a few years ago. Now, I had no idea what mental health was. You know, people talk about black dog, clouds. My understanding of it was, you know, you've got a roof over your head, you've got a car in the drive, cheer the fuck up. That was my understanding of mental health issue. I never got it, but it just came out of nowhere and it really hit me with sleep. I wasn't sleeping at all. Now, when people say, oh yeah, I never get any sleep last night, I was literally staring at the ceiling and going right through to my alarm going off and then going to work and thinking, right, that's fine, and then doing the exact same thing. This went on for weeks. Now I know what caused it, and I'll come to that very shortly, but I started to use alcohol as a crutch to get to sleep, because it put me to sleep. Well, it never put me to sleep. I was passing out every night. But I found myself in this horrible cycle of drinking, you know, cans of cider, bottles of wine, the odd dram here and there, and it worked. And I was maybe doing that on a Thursday and then a Friday, and then it was a Saturday, so of course you have to drink on a Saturday. And then I was feeling a bit rough on the Sunday, and there was four cans left in the fridge, so I had to have them, but I only had the three. Then it got to Monday and you were back to work and there was one can, so you had to go get more. And I fell into this vicious circle, but it was helping me personally because it was allowing me to get some sleep. And somehow that versus hangovers just seemed like a better fit for me. The reason for it, I came out of what I thought was a really good relationship. Now, I was with my partner for 8 years, and we were engaged for the last few years of the relationship. And she left me. Now, I'm not going to explain the reason why she left me. We had just moved into this rented house together, so she went on her own path. I was left with the house. You know, it financially broke me. 3 months later, COVID hit, and that obviously came with its own stresses. So yeah, I went through this vicious cycle, and it was just such a strange phase to be in, you know, because as much as I didn't like the hangovers, I did enjoy the being able to sleep. And you know, I was working from home, you know, I was going to work and I was fine, and then I was having a few drinks in the evening and I was just doing that and doing that. So to me, everything was okay. But of course, as Alex explained, alcohol is a depressant and it just made things worse. So I never spoke to anyone about this, and this went on for months and months and months and months. Now, it got really bad. Now, I'm very family orientated. Within us, I've got my mum, my dad, and I've got two younger sisters, and they, to me, were absolutely everything. Now, my middle child sister, she was pregnant at the time, and my youngest sister was getting married and emigrating to Australia. And it was actually at my youngest sister's wedding where I had to sit through and endure a lot of, what, my sister's married, when's it going to be your turn, when's it going to be your turn? And honestly, that absolutely destroyed me. It was like a knife through the heart every time, because all I've ever wanted in life was to fall in love, be loved, and start a family. And I thought I had it. For 8 years, I honestly thought I had it, and then it just got ripped away from me. Between the drinking and being at that wedding and having to endure that, you know, I was a very proud big brother. I was so proud. You know, my two sisters are just absolutely smashing life, and I was smashing life as well. Good job and managing to keep things going, but I never had the only thing that I wanted, and they had it. So the wedding for me was pretty much the last straw. Now, the wedding was in November, and come Christmas time, it got really bad. The sleeping, the drinking, everything was horrendous, and I was done. I couldn't go on like that anymore. You know, and I had tried things. You know, I stopped drinking. You know, it didn't make me better. You know, I tried going to the gym. It didn't make me better. I tried eating better. It didn't make me, nothing worked. And because I was lonely, that was it. I was ridiculously lonely, and I absolutely hated that. But yeah, all this happened. It had been going on and on and on and on and on. I was done, and I decided that I wasn't doing it anymore. And I said my goodbyes to everyone, strangely enough, without them knowing it. So I said goodbye to my mum and dad. I said goodbye to my sisters. And then I went to go see my best mate's got two kids, and they're like my unofficial niece and nephew. And I've got another mate from work who just randomly asked me to be part of his daughter's life. So I'm a great uncle, and I love that. You know, it's absolutely fantastic. And I said goodbye to them as well. So I went, because it was Christmas time, my mum was like, oh, I've made all their steak pie. My mum makes about 45, 50 steak pies. So I decided to go and do every year I do it, I drop off all the steak pies. And this time was a little different, because when I dropped off the last steak pie and said goodbye to everyone, I decided I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I got an email from booking.com. Now, my mum and dad are retired now, and they are enjoying booking hotels, and they don't know how to use a phone, so I reap the benefits of booking all their hotels, and I get the free vouchers. Now, I was given on that day an email. It was a £100 voucher, and I was only 20 minutes away from Arbroath. Now, we grew up in Arbroath, Red Lion Caravan Park. That to me was my safe haven, my safe place. And I thought, do you know what? I'm just going to get a hotel, because I don't want to go home. I don't want to face anyone. I just needed to be me. And I thought, I'm going to go get a hotel, because the way I'm feeling right now, I'm at risk. So I booked a hotel that day, managed to check in. And yeah, went to Arbroath and went to all the places I did as a child and everything else, and I honestly God thought I was maybe feeling a little bit better. The long and short of it is I found myself on a bridge in Arbroath looking at the sea. Now, there was a really bad storm that weekend, and I knew that if I went in, that was it. And it was very appealing for me at that point. It was cold. It was very, very cold. It was New Year, and I was on this bridge, and I didn't push myself off it, but I didn't push myself from it either. And I must have been there for about an hour, and I was completely numb. And for the first time in a very, very, very long time, I actually felt like me again. The pain just disappeared. And I knew it disappeared because I was very, very close to going by. And I don't know if it was luck, I don't know what to call it, but I just remember going backwards. And there was a young lad that pulled me off that bridge. He saw what I was about to do, and he pulled me off. And that to me was a pretty terrifying moment. So he found out where I was staying. He got me back to the hotel, and I thought that was the end of it. And about 3 hours later, the door went, and it was the police doing a welfare check on me. And they came in, and you know, they asked questions and stuff like that. And I basically told them everything that was going on. I did lie. I told them I wasn't suicidal, but at that point I was. So they followed their checklist and procedures and everything else. And you know, I had a lot of alcohol in the room, which I never drank. At no point in that whole visit did I want to drink. So they flushed it down the toilet. They're like, would you mind if we put this down the toilet? I was like, yeah, go nuts. It's 3 in the morning. I'm done. So yeah, that's what happened, essentially. I still to this day don't know if I would have done it, but I was very, very close, and it scared me a lot. Now, I woke up the next morning after about 2 hours and looked in the mirror, and I just looked at myself and said, right, you nearly done that last night. You're definitely not okay. You need something. So sort yourself out or get the fuck. But yeah, drove home and just pretended like everything was normal. Drove home on a Sunday, pretended like everything was normal. Mum and my dad found it a bit strange that I'd stayed at a hotel. Just told them that I'd got a voucher and I needed a bit of me time and everything else, and just went back to doing it. Now, the Monday, I was driving home from work. Now, I drive past Andy's Man's Club in my hometown every time I finish work. It's just on the way home. And I've seen the banners out there. I'm going to be honest, I thought it was Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's what used to be there. And I thought, I'm going to check that out. So I went on the Google and kind of found out what it was. I thought, right, next Monday I'm going to go to that. And just by chance, 2 days later, I got a letter through the door, which was from the local council. And it was a list, because the police done a welfare check, it was a list of things that I could go to, Samaritans and everything else. Now, that really scared me, but I thought, you know, I need to go to this meeting. So the next Monday, I decided, I parked the car, and I urged myself to go, and I started walking towards the door, and then I shit myself, and I was like, no, no. And I started walking away, and it was just this heavy English accent that I'm not even going to attempt to do. It's like, mate, come here. And I just turned round and it's like, will you come in here? And I said, yeah. He's like, trust me, it'll be the best thing you ever do. Walk through the door. And I did. And it was honestly the best thing I'd ever done. It was just this random group of men. And now I knew some of them, being in my local town, and my mum and dad being in a taxi game for so many years, growing up was a nightmare. I always get into trouble and always get caught. But even at that, you know, I knew these people and they knew me. And they were doing these shares and I was able to do the same. Now, I never shared on the first week. I never shared on the second week and I never shared on the third week, because I just was embarrassed. You know, I didn't want to tell these guys that, you know, I was coming to this club for 3 weeks and then the club ends at 9 o'clock. So I've still got an hour to run to the newsagents and grab a bottle of wine and go home and drink myself stupid. And this went on for 3 weeks. And then on the fourth week, I thought, you know what, I'm some nice guys there. I'm going to go and it'll be the last time I go, but I'm going to get everything off my chest. And I did. I never told them that story. I told them that I ended up at a place and I almost done something very silly. And as soon as I got that off my chest, this weight just jumped. It just disappeared. It was amazing. And I walked out of that door and I felt great. I thought, wow. And I went home. I went past the shop and thought, nah, no chance. Went home and went to bed and fell asleep. And it was amazing. I fell asleep. And I thought, that was one day. So I went again and again and again and again and again, and it just changed my life. Like the things that have come from that club, you know, I've got some amazing friends now. I've got, first of all, a support group. You know, I've got this safe space I can just go and vent or laugh and joke, and it's great. And yeah, sometimes I am quiet. It happens. And from there, I've got this kind of local group of friends now as well. And some of them are fathers, and I've just became a father, you know, so their stories have helped me and have inspired me. You know, I was able to, you know, go back to my parents, and even they were saying, wow, you're really, you know, you've changed, what's going on, you're so happy, you're so... Because I was an irritating bastard. You know, everything was just pissing me off, and I was just so negative about everything, you know. So my whole outlook just changed, and my mum got me by saying, it's really nice to have my boy back. When she said that, I knew how far I had gone. Now, they could see it. And at some point, I will tell them this story. I don't want to tell them this story because I don't want them to worry about me. But they know that I go to the club now, and they know that it works, and I know that it works. So that's what happened. That's how I got to the club, and the club has really changed my life. You know, I'm a homeowner now. I've got this amazing, beautiful, 3-month human being that is just complete. That's all I ever wanted. I love my partner too, but like the fact that she has given me this human being that, oh my goodness, I would do anything for her. Like, my whole outlook has changed. And one day I'm going to tell my daughter this story. And I really hope that she sees, you know, she's going to see her dad every Monday disappearing for 3 hours, you know, and it's because I'm going to my hometown. I don't live in my hometown anymore, and it's only been 5 months, but I really miss it. She's going to see her dad going to Andy's Man's Club, and I'm going to tell her, I'm going to come back and tell her what we spoke about. And that's what it's all about. It's just giving this place to vent. Now, I'm going to be a much better person because of it. You know, I can get through the week now because Monday night is my night and it's the club night. And I'm in a very fortunate position where I can now lead the club in my hometown and get people through that door. You know, I've had people come to me for support. I've helped people through things. You know, it's just such an incredible feeling. And everything I do is now for my daughter, and that will never, ever change. But I like to think I'm an absolutely fantastic father. I mean, I can change a nappy in 14 seconds. I'm brilliant. You know, and that's all down to the club, you know. And I suppose if I had to say one thing after all of that, because my mouth's getting really dry now and I need some water, it is okay to talk. Yep. Cheers, everyone.
Cammy, and before him, Alex, talking last night at the Wilderness Wellbeing Retreat. If you want to find out more about the retreat, I've put details in the show notes, and I've also put links there to Andy's Man Club. Speaking of Suicide is funded by Mikey's Line. The podcast platform is supported by D&D Paving Limited, and the series is produced by Adventurous Audio Limited. On the 14th of December 2019, I found a lump in my left breast. I didn't for one second imagine I'd have cancer. Me? Cancer? That's mental, right? Honest, sweary, heartbreaking, and sometimes funny. Lump is a journey through cancer like no other. My journey. I thought I was far too fit. Intelligent, feisty, fun-loving, life-filling, but mainly just too bloody busy to get cancer. Turns out, cancer doesn't care how busy you are. And with 1 in 7 women now diagnosed with breast cancer, likelihood is you'll know someone just like me. I don't know how to tell her I'm drowning without wanting to cling to her to keep me afloat, without worrying she'll feel it's her role to paddle us. Lump, a dive into the emotional minefield and madness of cancer with me, Penny Stewart. Like it, rate it, share it, wherever you get your podcasts.